All right, Crossline, we're going to jump into our series this morning. Thought we were going to play Kahoot, but we actually stole that from you. So there you go. First lesson on stealing. Hey, we are in this series called The Big Ten. If you're joining us maybe for the first time this summer, we have been going through the Ten Commandments. We've been doing this 10-week series on the Ten Commandments. Is those things, the Ten Commandments are something that feel like maybe they're stuck in time sometimes, that maybe, you know, that we get how they apply, but there's a lot actually going on with the Ten Commandments. And so we've been exploring those at a deeper level and understanding how they really apply to us in a broader way. And so we've been exploring those over these last 10 weeks. And one of the things that we've talked about is the Ten Commandments are kind of split up into two halves. You got Commandments 1 through 4 are really about how we relate with God. And then Commandments 5 through 10 are really about how we relate with other people. Right? And so we've been going through that, and it brings us to our morning today, which is we're in week number 9 of our series, Commandment number 8, don't steal. And when it comes to relating with others, right, and it comes to our relationship with other people, hopefully our last 2 weeks have been on murder and adultery. And hopefully, like, that's not a super common experience, right? Like, hopefully that's maybe a little less common. But I would bet that stealing, on the other hand, that one's probably a lot more common for us. I bet that many of us have actually even been on the wrong end of this one, right? Like, anybody in here ever had something taken from you before? Anybody ever had something stolen from you? Okay, yeah, a lot of us. All right, so we've been on that end, right? And it's terrible. I remember the biggest thing that I've ever had taken from me in my life was my motorcycle. I know, yes. And it was when I was like I was graduating college, moving in out of, I had just graduated college, newly married, like my wife Kirsten and I were still young in our relationship. And I had this Suzuki GS500F. It was my first and only motorcycle. I had a car before that I was making payments on, but I didn't want to make payments anymore. And so I sold that car, made a profit. I used the profit from selling my car to buy this motorcycle in cash. And so I owned it. It was mine. It was the first motorcycle I ever had. It was my only vehicle. I did not have like a backup vehicle. You know, it was just like me and the motorcycle. Like, that's what I had. And I loved that thing. I had so much fun riding that. I loved driving it every single day. And it meant so much to me because it was mine. I owned it, right? And so one day, I was getting ready for work. I was freshly graduated, and I started working. I was valet parking cars at the time. So I was getting ready for my valet parking job, and I go downstairs, and I look where my motorcycle is supposed to be parked, and there is an empty spot there. And I'm like, man, did I park that somewhere else? Like, did I just forget where I put it? You know, like, that was my first thought. And so I was like looking around, and I was like, I don't see it anywhere over here. This is so weird. Like, it did not register with me that something could have been stolen like this, right? Like, my brain refused to accept it. So you know where my brain went next? You know, when I was in high school, me and my friend, we used to prank our neighborhood. We thought it was funny to do things like this. And so I thought, my next rational thought was, maybe some kids thought it would be funny to move my motorcycle to another part of the apartment complex. And it's just somewhere around here. I just have to find it. Like, clearly somebody has moved it, right? That's where my mind went next. And so I literally took the next 30 minutes and I walked around my entire apartment complex and checked every single parking spot. I was going up to other people's motorcycles that were like covered, and I was like lifting up the car. I was like, maybe this one's mine, you know? Nope, it's not mine, you know? And I was going around, and when I finished searching and I had no other options left, I was like, my heart just dropped out of my chest. Like, somebody actually stole my motorcycle. And this was my only vehicle. Like, I was devastated. I couldn't get to work. I had no way to go to work. I had no way to go and do the things that I needed to do. I had no backup plan. I didn't have a ton of savings. I'm fresh out of college. Like, I sold my car so that I could own this thing and not have to pay a lot of money for it, right? And so it's not like I had money in the bank just laying around so I could go get another vehicle. And I was so devastated. Like, it crushed me that people could do that. I called the cops. I looked at the video camera from the apartment complex. We had the video camera, but not enough detail to actually go after anything. I finally scrounged up enough money to get another car. I paid $1,000 for a car. Like, you know what kind of car I was driving, all right? And so, like, that's what I was riding around in. But I would drive around Lakeland just hoping that I would see somebody on my motorcycle. I was waiting for a call from the police saying, hey, we got it. But it never came. Nothing ever was found. No reports ever. Like, nothing happened. The people just got away with it. It messed me up. Like, it messed up my trust in people, in where I lived. I didn't feel safe where I lived anymore. Like, there would be times where I would just randomly go look out the front blinds of my apartment just to, like, make sure the car that I did have was still there, you know? And that's what stealing does. Like, it can completely change how we see the world. I felt helpless. There was nothing that I could do. And having something like that happen is pretty terrible. And we saw that raise of hands. I'm not the only person who's experienced something like that. And I also know that I'm not just a victim. Like, we've probably all taken something. Even when just you were younger, maybe your sibling had something and you just snatched it from them, right? Or you stole a candy bar from the store or whatever. Like, a lot of us have some of those stories in our background. But then as adults, it starts to look a little bit different. It takes on a different form. And look, I don't think of myself as somebody who takes things, right? I work hard. I provide for my family. I show up. And for a long time, that was enough for me to hear the commandment, thou shalt not steal, and think, like, cool, I got that one. I'm good. Not me. Not it, right? But taking somebody else's stuff isn't the only way that we steal. See, over the last few years, I've started paying attention to a different kind of taking in my life. Like, I started paying attention to taking more credit than I've earned on something. Not giving others enough shine, but making sure I get the attention for something that maybe I didn't really fully do. Making sure that my family's comfort was covered before anybody else's need. And taking in that way. Promising God that I would give something, a tithe, an offering, a support to something, but then making sure I was comfortable first. And maybe not giving that thing that I told God I would give. Cutting corners in places that I told myself that didn't matter. And look, none of it dramatic, right? But all of it very real. And all of it coming from the same place. This kind of quiet belief that I need to make sure I'm taken care of. Because I'm not sure anybody else will. And I would bet that I'm probably not alone in here this morning. I think that belief is probably a lot more common than we would want to admit, right? A lot of us take in a lot of different ways. We promise God that we'll give a tithe or that we'll serve. We're going to give our time to God. And then all of a sudden, that promise meets tension, right? The finances are a little thin this month. I'm a little busy. And so I'm not going to serve because I got to make sure I got time for me. I got to have my me time. And so we hold back, right? We take the things that we promised that we would give. And not out of necessity, but just because we want to be comfortable. Or we start cutting little corners where nobody's watching or we think nobody's watching. You know, maybe you've been at work scrolling on Facebook for 30 minutes and you know you're not giving your boss that time back. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to work 30 minutes of overtime to make up for it. Or you take a little bit, maybe more than your share. Or maybe you've been at the self-checkout and you forgot to scan something and you walked out and you thought, oh, I forgot to scan that, but you didn't go back in. You're like, that company, they'll be all right. They can handle a little loss. I'm not going to go back in for that. Or maybe you didn't quite report everything you were supposed to on your taxes. Or maybe there was something that you felt like you just wanted the credit for. And so you stood up and you spoke up when it wasn't your time to take that credit. Or maybe you promised somebody presence to be somewhere, and even though maybe you showed up in body, you took yourself out of the picture because your mind was somewhere else. We all have places where we're taking. I mean, a lot of this comes down to this question, like, have you ever felt like you have to provide everything? You ever felt like that? Like, it's all on your shoulders? Because that question, that feeling that I have to provide, I have to be the one who shows up, I have to be the one who does all the things, well, that becomes a weight. And that weight is kind of a precursor to taking. That weight can get really tiring. But really what that question, that weight is more so than just tiring. It's actually a faith problem. It's this belief that God isn't going to cover this one, so I will. God's not going to take care of me. He's not going to cover me, and so I got to take care of it. And so some of us will take because of that. Some of us will take because at the end of the day, we value ourselves and ultimately our comfort over other people. Some of us, we don't trust what God has given is fair or just, and so we feel like we need to even the scales. Or maybe some of us are here and we're just checking this whole God thing out and we're still exploring it, and it's not something we're really committed to yet, and so we don't really know God like that. And you've spent your whole life providing for yourself because nobody else is going to come and rescue you, right? And you wouldn't call yourself a thief, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And if that's you, like, I understand where you're at. I get that thinking. I get that process. And so I just want to encourage you to stay with me because we're all going to explore this ancient command today that may not seem relevant at first, but I think has more weight to it than might appear on the surface. I think what our commandment is going to cause us to do today is start asking a question, and not how do I stop taking, but really, why do I take in the first place? Why is it that I keep taking? Why do I keep doing these things? And when we start to look at our life through that question, the command starts to feel a lot less like somebody else's problem and starts to move a little bit closer to home. And so as we explore this commandment, or as we explore this question, we're going to start with the commandment in Exodus. And so we're going to turn to Exodus chapter 20, and we're going to look at verse 15. It's real short. Verse 15, you must not steal. You guys could memorize that one. That's only four words. You could memorize a whole verse today. This is where we start today. You must not steal. It's two words in Hebrew. Lo tignov, which is the same as murder and adultery. The previous two commandments were also just two words, right? And like I said last week, the Bible doesn't do things on accident, right? The writers of the Bible were not writing this thing on accident. This is intentional. All three of these commandments, murder, adultery, and stealing, all two words, all lumped right together, right next to each other. And so it should tell us something. Because I think we, a lot of times, look at this command and we file it under misdemeanors. Like, yeah, like stealing, it's bad. We shouldn't do it, but it's not that bad, you know? And whereas like murder and adultery, like, no, those are terrible, right? We kind of put them in two different categories. But here, in the Ten Commandments, God's put them all right next to each other. And so this command is about more than just protecting property. See, this command is actually protecting the fabric of community. I mean, taking from someone communicates something very clearly. And that's that your ownership matters less than my need or my perceived need. And that's the kind of stuff that tears communities apart. And it's really important here because Israel is a very new people. Like, God's giving them the Ten Commandments shortly after he rescued them from 400 years of slavery. And so he's trying to teach them how to be a free people. No longer slaves, but now you are a free people. You're my people. What does that look like? How do we relate to each other? How do we live together? How do we become a God-designed community? Well, it's right here. And every act of taking says that you're not as important as I am. Whether it's taking somebody's property, whether it's stealing from time, whether it's taking credit that you didn't earn, whether it's taking somebody's trust and abusing it, it's all a statement about worth and how we view another person, right? As made in the image of God or as not made in the image of God, and how important that is, which again is a similar theme to adultery and murder. That's really what's underneath adultery and murder. They're image of God questions, and all three of these are grouped together. And they're only two words, but there's a lot that goes into those two words. And so this command is trying to show us something this morning. And that's this: what's not yours is not yours. And taking it always costs more than you think. There's always a bigger cost associated with taking than we think there is. I mean, think about where we're at today as a society. Just a little quick experiment, just quick raise of hands. Who in here has any type of video surveillance on their home? Ring doorbell, you got a camera in home, out home? Okay, look around. Like, it's almost every hand is up in here, all right? Most of us have some sort of video surveillance on the place that we live. Why? Why do we do that? Well, because somewhere along the way, someone took something that wasn't theirs to take, aka stealing. And now trust is gone. Like, we as a general society do not trust each other. That's why we need videos, right? We need to know what's going on at our homes at all time. And it's not always outside. Sometimes it's inside. Sometimes somebody inside the home took something that wasn't theirs to take. And now you got to have video cameras watching them, right? Because you don't trust them to do the right thing. Or sometimes it's not even that we necessarily got taken from. Like, it doesn't even have to be something was taken from us. You may have video cameras and nothing has ever been stolen from you, but you still don't trust people because you've seen, you know, you've heard the stories, right? And so this is a serious problem. And so what does God do? Similar to last week, God actually expands this commandment with consequences. So in Exodus 20, we get the commandment, do not steal. In Exodus 22, we get the consequences for stealing. God spells it out. He says, if you get caught stealing one ox, you have to pay back five. If you get caught stealing one sheep, you have to pay back four. Why does he do that? Because taking always costs more than it gains. The people who took my motorcycle, they may not have known that that was my only vehicle. They weren't thinking about me. They weren't thinking about the anxiety I would have to experience just sitting in my home wondering if somebody was taking my next vehicle. They weren't thinking about how I was going to view the world after that moment. They were just thinking about themselves. But it costs more than just taking a vehicle. It costs everyone. And so the consequences of taking cost the taker four or five times what they took. That's God's institution here. And so what the law is telling us what taking costs, which is important. But what's at the heart of this? Like, why are we taking in the first place? And I think as we start to examine it, the answer is actually pretty simple. We take because we don't believe there will be enough. That's what's at the root of this. We take because we don't believe there will be enough. We don't believe that we'll be taken care of. We don't believe that what God has given us is enough, that we need more, and he's not going to provide it, so we have to provide it for ourselves. And this isn't a new thought. This isn't a new struggle. Israel struggled with this too. Humans have been struggling with this for thousands of years. Israel was coming out of slavery, and you got to remember, when they were slaves in Egypt, they were there for 400 years, that's several generations, and then all of a sudden they're out and they're in the wilderness. And they don't know where their next meal is going to come from. You know, they're like, hey, at least when we were in Egypt, we were getting three squares a day, you know? Like, out here, we don't know. When they were slaves, they had learned to trust that Egypt would feed them at the very least. But now that they don't have Egypt, they have to learn to trust God for those things. They have to learn how to trust God for what they need. And how does he do it? How does God choose to, like, teach Israel how to trust him? Well, he does it with this thing called manna, right? And manna was this bread-like substance that would appear like dew every morning, right? And it was said that it was sweet, and it was daily bread. And every day God said, hey, collect exactly what you need, and you will always have enough. I will make sure of it, right? But you know what some of those people did, of course? They tried to hoard it, right? They tried to take more than they needed. They tried to maybe take from somebody else. You know what happened every night to bread that was stored up, to that manna that was stored? Worms. Every night, without fail. It never lasted to the next day. God was trying to teach Israel, I will provide for you. You don't have to take. I will show up. They had to trust that each day there would be enough. And truly, to live as free people, which is what God was trying to teach, to live life to the full, is to be free from the chase. You know, that constant striving, that constant scraping and getting by, that constant self-provision every single day, I've got to get more and more because nobody's going to show up for me. That's a trap. That's a trap, and it's not freedom. And we still struggle with this today. I mean, think about it. Every day, what do? We're scrolling through social media, and we're looking at everybody else's highlights, right? They're posting pictures of their latest, greatest vacation, and you're just like, man, I want to go on vacation like that. They're showing you what they got their new car or what. They're just posting their highlights, right? It's what everybody does on social media. You just post your highlights and we're scrolling through and we're seeing it and we're constantly comparing our lives to it. And sometimes it's not even people we know. Sometimes it's just influencers who are paid to literally post content like that. And you're like, oh, I wish I could be like that. It's like, that's literally their job. But we're constantly comparing ourselves. And then on top of that, we drive down the road, and what do we see? Advertisements, billboards everywhere telling you what you need. They're on these advertisements are on the road. They're on your TV screen that you're watching. They're on your phone. Like, you are constantly being told, you need this, you need that, right? And after a while, that kind of thinking starts to seep in. And we start thinking, you know what? I do need a new phone. Everybody else got a smartphone. I got a dumb phone. I need a new one. Mine's not good enough. You know what? We do need a bigger place. This house isn't big enough. This house isn't good enough. It's too old. I don't have a kitchen like that. I don't have space like they got. You know what? This car, man, I still got to have an aux cord. Like, I want Bluetooth, you know? I need that. Everybody else has it. I don't have it. Like, we start to think like that, that we do need the upgrade. And then, if we give into it, you know what happens every time we get more? The goalpost just moves, right? You give into that thinking, the goalpost just moves. You get the new phone, they drop another one, right? And you're just like, oh, man, should have waited 2 more months. You get the new car, and then a new thing is released. And you're just like, oh, that's way better than what I got. The goalpost just always moves there, and it's never ending. And we get trapped, and we get bound. And along the way, we end up taking to try and keep up. But there's a different way to live. There's a different kind of belief that can change that taking mindset, that need that I gotta go and get it. I gotta provide it for myself. And I think it was wrote the most beautifully by a man named King David. He was the most important king in Israel's history. He was a great warrior and he was a great poet. And he wrote most of what we know as the Book of Psalms. And he wrote a psalm that's super popular. Some of you guys maybe even have this one memorized that I think just kind of echoes through today. And it's really what it is a reflection on what God was doing with Israel with the manna. David wrote something that really kind of echoed what God was trying to teach Israel. And it was something I read it a few years ago, and it really has kind of sat deep within my soul and something that's still really impacting me. So we read this. This is Psalm 23:1. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need. Psalm 23:1. That's the NLT translation. And I love that translation because of those 6 words at the end there. I have all that I need. Everything that I need, I have it. Why? Because I have a good shepherd. David doesn't write, the Lord is my shepherd, and I'll have everything that I ever wanted. Right? That's not what he writes there. He doesn't write, the Lord is my shepherd, and I'll never lack. He doesn't write that. He says, with this shepherd, with God, I have all that I need. Period. And as I started to sit with that psalm and meditate on that, this thought came to me. And I said to myself, I said, if this is true, if Psalm 23:1 is true and I have all that I need, then what that means is if I don't have it, I either don't need it or God's not done yet. If Psalm 23:1 is true and I don't have it, I either don't need it or God's just not done. And I think that is a mindset shift that changes everything. And then here's the other part of that Psalm 23:1. Who's the person who's defining the need? It's not the ads. It's not my neighbor's driveway. It's not my algorithm. It's the shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. And I have all that I need. It's the shepherd who defines the need. And it's the shepherd who provides the need. See, the shepherd knows what we need better than we do. And he will make sure that we get it. Sometimes we got some wants that we present as needs, right? Maybe you've been through that with your kids before. You've been like out in the garage. We need this. No, we don't need it. You want it. All right, stop that. The shepherd knows what we actually need. And he knows it better than we do. And if you're in a place where you're just like, yeah, but you don't understand, I'm struggling. I feel like maybe God forgot my need. It's not always in our timing, but God has never lost track of you. And even when it shows up later than you want it, he knows your need and he will provide. That's the kind of shepherd that we have. And Jesus actually shows us what this looks like lived out in the face of temptation. All right. So we're going to turn to Matthew chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. This is what it says, starting in verse 1. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted there by the devil. For 40 days and 40 nights he fasted. That means he wasn't eating, and he became very hungry, as one might expect. During that time, the devil came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become loaves of bread." But Jesus told him, "No. The scriptures say, people do not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." And so here's Jesus. He goes out to the desert and he fasts for 40 days and 40 nights. Some of us in here can't contemplate 24 hours without a meal, right? And Jesus does it for 40 days. That's a long time to go without eating. And so, yeah, he's hungry, right? And what does Satan come to him and do? He says, "Jesus, you know what you need? You need bread. You need to eat. You should make these stones turn into bread and provide for yourself," right? That's what he's trying to tempt Jesus to do. Provide for yourself. Go ahead. And Jesus, he could have. He absolutely could have. He had the power to do that. He was hungry, right? 40 days. He deserved some bread, right? He had every right to do it. And he says to Satan, "Man shall not live on bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." See, Jesus refused to take provision outside of his Father's timing. Outside of God's timing, he refused to take provision. He was hungry and still trusting. He was hungry and knew and still believed that the Lord is his shepherd and he shall not want. See, when this becomes the belief that we live from, it starts to change everything. Because there is no need for us to take when this is true. If we believe we have all that we need and that man should not live on bread alone, there's never a need to take. You won't need it. But when you don't believe that this is true, when you start to believe that you have to provide everything, well, that is the precursor to taking. Then you will start to take. You'll start to take money. You'll start to cut corners on the taxes or reporting your hours or whatever that looks like for you. You'll start to take time. "I don't have enough. I don't have enough time. God doesn't give me enough time." You have the same 24 hours everybody else does, but for some reason you feel like you need to take more. I don't get enough credit. Nobody sees the work that I'm doing. And so I'm going to jump in and I'm going to make sure my name's known because I got to advance. Because I don't trust that God's going to advance me. I got to get the attention because I need it. And I don't think God's going to give it to me. And what happens is we'll take and we'll take and we'll take. But when we know deep in our soul that everything we need, the shepherd will provide, well, then we can't help but to give. It creates a whole different mode of living. David writes about it in Psalm 23, just 4 verses later. He says that my cup overflows. It's the same psalm, same shepherd. He starts with I shall not want. And then a little bit later, he says, my cup overflows. But here's the thing about having an overflowing cup. You can't give from a cup that you're guarding. You got a lid on that bad boy and you're making sure you got what you got, right? Then it can't overflow. You can only give from a cup and only overflow from a cup that you believe somebody else is filling. If you think it all depends on you, you're going to put a lid on it. But if you believe somebody else is continually filling it to overflowing, then you can give. And what does this look like What does a person look like when they start to really live this truth? Well, Paul talks about it in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28. He describes it really simply, actually. It's one of the reasons I love Paul. He's a straightforward dude. Verse 28, he says, if you are a thief, quit stealing. Instead, use your hands for good, hard work, and then give generously to others in need. Paul has a very clear progression here from taker to worker to giver, right? Notice he doesn't stop at just quit stealing. Like, he could have just said, like, hey, if you're a thief, quit stealing. All right, end of verse. Let's move on to the next thing we need to talk about, right? But he doesn't stop there. See, for Paul, the goal is not to be neutral. The goal is not to just be somebody who doesn't take things. The goal is actually to be somebody who gives things. That's where a life with Christ leads us to. That is the opposite of taking, is being somebody who gives. See, the taker is somebody who asks always, what can I get? And the giver is somebody who asks, what can I release? What can I give? That's somebody who asks, what can I release? What can I give? That's somebody who believes they have all that they need. And we can't manufacture that by trying harder, by just trying to be a good person, right? That comes from security. That comes from a belief that you have a shepherd who gives you all that you need and that man doesn't live by bread alone. Somebody who starts to live like this, the natural posture is open hands. Open hands are the natural posture of somebody who believes that their father is about to give them more, right? This clenched fist right here, clenched fists are great for protecting, right? If you got something in your hands and you don't want somebody to take it, you close those fists down. You can hold it tight to your body, right? This is great for protecting, but it's terrible at receiving. And so if you want to take and you want to just hold what you have, you're not going to leave room to receive more. The second you open your hands, you can now receive. And that's the posture of somebody who believes that their father's about to give them more. And this is the difference between the world and the people of God, right? This is why God puts it in the Ten Commandments. He's telling Israel, hey, you came from a place where you had to take and scrounge and fight for everything that you have. And that's true of the world today. If you don't have God, you are left to your own devices. And you do have to take and scrounge and protect and provide for yourself. But the second you put your trust in Jesus, you now put yourself under the care of a good shepherd who says, you can open your hands because I'm going to give you everything that you need. And so what do we do with this? How do we start to make this switch? How do I start to change this maybe belief that I've been holding on to? Well, I got one thing that I want us to do together right now, and then I'm going to give you a few things to kind of take home with you. And so the thing we're going to do right now is just a personal inventory. I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to name some categories, some places where we often find ourselves taking. And in this moment, this is for you to kind of sit with God here. I'm going to read through this list, and I just want you to sit with the Lord. And if you want, you can close your eyes if that helps you focus. But really, this is a moment for you to just kind of hear from God and take a little personal inventory of maybe somebody of somewhere where you might find yourself taking. And as I read through this list, you're probably going to have one thing. It might already even be coming to your mind now where God's saying, hey, this is where you've been taking. I want you to stop. And I'll get through reading this list, and I'm going to give you a second to write that down, and I'm going to give you three things to do with that this week. So I'm going to pray first, and then I'm just going to read through this list. So if you guys will pray with me here. I just want to ask, Holy Spirit, as I read through this list, would you speak truth to us? Would you show us and reveal in us maybe the place that we've been taking that's not ours to take? Would you show us the truth and not just what we want to see? Guide us through this moment, God. All right, so I'm going to read this list, and I just want you to think about which of these areas have you been taking in? Have you been taking in the area of money? Have you been cutting corners? Maybe it's in the taxes. Maybe it's in the way you report your hours for work. Or maybe you've just been hoarding money on the side and not telling your spouse. What's the thing that you've been meaning to give back? That borrow that ended up not being a borrow? Was there an expense that wasn't quite accurate? Was there something that you told God that you would give? God, I'll give you the 10% or whatever that number was for you. And you committed to giving it, but then you pulled back because you had to make sure you were comfortable first. Is the air you've been taking credit? Is it the win that you let people believe was yours because you wanted to feel good? Is it the attention that you took? Is it the celebration that wasn't yours? Is it time? What time do you owe an employer? What time have you taken from your family? What are the hours that you promised and quietly took back? Or maybe for you it's presence. Who are the people that need you to be present and then get the version of you that's already somewhere else? Where have you shown up and not really been there and taken that away? Whatever you feel like God is kind of elevating for you, think of one thing and just take a second. I want you guys to write that down. Just, you can write on your note cards. You can put it in your phone, in your notes, but just take a moment and write that down. And then I'm going to give you three things. I'm going to give us three things to do this week so we can start to go after that. Because honestly, if we just stand up here and talk about truth and don't ever live it out, it's pointless. So we want to be people who live transformed. So here's three things I have for you this week. For whatever your thing is that you wrote down, whatever God highlighted in you, here's three things. First is this. I would encourage you, I would challenge you this week. Meditate on Psalm 23:1. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need. Meditate on that. The whole week, sit with this one verse. Let it sit in your spirit. Let it rattle around in your brain all week. Think about those six words. I have all that I need. Every morning before you open up your phone and start scrolling through the feed, think about, I have all that I need. Every time you feel a pull towards the new, towards the shiny, towards the upgrade, think about that psalm. I have all that I need. Every time you catch yourself calculating or measuring other people's pockets, check yourself. I have all that I need. At night, as you drift off to sleep, repeat that in your head. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need. Six words. Think about them every single day this week until the shepherd's voice becomes louder than your algorithms. Meditate on Psalm 23:1 this week. Next thing I have for you is make it right. And if there's an area that you've been taking, go and make it right this week. Give it back. Return the thing. Correct the record. Pay what you owe. Make good on what God has told you to do. If God's called you to do something and you've taken in that area, go and do that thing. And look, this is one where it starts to get uncomfortable. This is where the rubber meets the road, as they say, right? Because repentance here isn't just, I'm sorry. Right? What we saw in Exodus 22, repentance in this area is actually making things right and restoring. Remember that ancient math. We give back more than we took. And so if you're here and you're like, I've been taking credit, right? Don't just stop taking other people's credit. Maybe actually this week, go to that person and say to them out loud in front of other people the credit that they deserve that you took. Be brave. And if you owe money, don't just give back what you owe, but actually add a little extra on top. Go out of your way to do something incredible and make it right. And then lastly, give expecting nothing in return. Give with expecting nothing in return here. The best way to win the battle against taking is to give. That's the best way to do it, especially where it hurts. Like if you have an area you're like, I'll give here, here, here I'm not giving, that's the place that you probably need to give the most, right? Taking has to be replaced, not just stopped, right? Just like Paul said in Ephesians. And so where is it for you? Is it time? Is it money? What can you start to give and expect nothing in return? Can you give somebody some extra time? Could you give some extra money someplace? Is there somebody that needs the credit? Can you give a meal? Can you give an afternoon to somebody expecting nothing in return? Something that costs you and returns nothing to you. And don't just do it as like a discipline, but do it as a way to say, I trust my Father enough to let this go. Man, if you got kids in the house, I would encourage you to do this one together. Do this as a family. Give something away this week with your kids and tell them why you're doing it. Tell them, hey, we're people who believe God takes care of us. And so we don't have to hold on so tight to this. We can give this away. That's a great way to start discipling your kids in this area. And look, none of this just works on willpower. If we want any chance at being not just takers, but instead being givers, we need Jesus. We need the power of God at work in our hearts, transforming us from the inside out. And maybe you're here and you're one of those people who's still trying to figure it out. Maybe you've spent your whole life providing for yourself and doing what you had to and taking care of yourself because nobody else was going to. I want to tell you this morning, you can put that down. You don't have to do that anymore. You've been carrying provision that was never yours to carry in the first place. And there's a shepherd who's been waiting to care for you, been waiting to get your attention. And you can have a relationship with him this morning, with the provider, with God. And all it takes is a yes to Jesus and a choice to follow him. And so if that's you and you're here this morning and you're ready, I'm going to pray and I want to give you an opportunity to say yes. And so will everybody bow their heads and close their eyes with me? And if you're ready to take that step this morning, you can, right from where you're at, talk to God. This is between you and him, from your heart to his, but you can use my words and you can say something like this. Dear God, I'm so tired. I'm tired of always having to look out for number one. I'm tired of having to provide for myself all the time. I'm ready to let you start doing that. I'm ready to place my trust in you. I realize that I need to repent. I need forgiveness for my sins. And so I ask for that this morning. I say yes to Jesus. I believe that he lived and died and rose again. I place my trust in you. Would you help me to follow you for the rest of my life? In Jesus' name, amen. Israel came out of Egypt where scarcity was the entire system. And God brought them to a mountain and said, "You're not there anymore. Live like people who are provided for." He's saying the same thing to us this morning. And imagine going through life not having to protect and scrounge all the time, but being able to just live open-handed because you know that you have a good shepherd who's going to provide everything that you need. As we wrap up this service this morning, we're going to do so with worship. And worship is a moment for us to connect with the God who gives us all that we need. And our first song this morning is really just an anthem declaring that God is holy, that he is other than, that he is separate, that there's nothing like him. And that's the God who's going to choose to provide for us. Will you guys stand with us as we get ready to worship?